Hello, folks. Welcome to The Environment. I'm your host, Scott Forster. It's a pleasure being here. And I want to thank KABU for allowing us to have these airwaves on behalf of the FCC and all the folks out there, the sponsors and supporters, listeners. Welcome. And my guest today is Paul Stanford, attorney extraordinaire, my words, with a little-known foundation, unless you watch cable access. The mainstream media is completely in a blackout and denial about a little thing called hemp. Paul, take it away. What are you? Where are we going? And what's special about today?
Well, we have a nonprofit organization, the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation. And the mandate that the IRS approved us as a nonprofit for is to tell the truth about hemp and cannabis and to help medical marijuana patients. So hemp, as many of our KABU listeners know, I'm sure, is an environmental resource of several sorts. Industrial hemp can produce paper and fabric and oil and protein in copious quantities. In fact, for protein and oil and fiber, hemp produces more of those than any other plant on this planet. Yet it's prohibited and called marijuana here in the United States.
You're talking about the production, the yield per acre, right? So, you know, instead of rapeseed or canola or anything else, that acre for acre, farmers could be extracting more oil and fiber per acre than
almost any other
crop. And protein as well, meal.
Yeah.
Protein meal for, like, birds.
According to a study from Notre Dame University back in 1975 called, it was published in a Notre Dame publication called The Midlands Naturalist. An acre of hemp produces over 4 tons of hemp seed. And hemp seed is 30% oil by weight. In a cold press, that 4 tons of hemp seed will produce over 300 gallons of hemp seed oil. And the next most and that's the most productive seed oil crop. The next most productive are rapeseed or canola, which you mentioned, soy and sunflower seeds. Each of those produce roughly 100 to 120 gallons of oil per acre.
It's almost a third, one-third of the
what yield, of hemp is. And the byproduct of pressing those 4 tons of seeds and getting 300 gallons of oil is 3 tons of high-protein hemp seed meal, which makes good food for both humans and domestic animals.
Well, now, folks, you got a taste of where we're going here. This is an environmental show, Money in the Environment. So the hook is hemp and marijuana. It's name given through, I think, negative governmental stereotyping.
Exactly.
Actually is related to the earth. We can do the earth justice by allowing a plant native to the world, productive with civilization for thousands of years, to come back and be legal and allow farmers and ranchers to grow a cash crop, allow people and domestic industries to utilize the fiber, oils, and meals. It sounds like a great idea. And besides, we got to do the biodiesel, which is now becoming hip and trendy. Imagine if farmers in Oregon and even non-traditional farmers, if you heard that Oregon is unlike many other states in the United States, that we actually have more farmers now than we've had in the last 10 years. We're creating new farmers, but they're small
farms.
Bucking
the trend.
Yeah, they tend to be small farms. So imagine if new farmers, younger generation, not knowing a lot, could pop in maybe 5 or 10 acres of hemp, get the production out of that, and do small-scale oil, protein, fiber, create their own industries for clothing, cloth, rope. Take the oil, use the oil for either biodiesel or as amendments to foods, et cetera.
Shampoos and soaps are coming out with hemp soap oil now.
Imagine the industry that could be created in this little old state called Oregon. We could be great leaders. And I think you have something to announce today.
Yeah, we have an initiative. We're calling it the Hemp for Biodiesel Initiative. We're really announcing it from our hemp stock cannabis convention that's taking place on the Portland waterfront in Waterfront Park on Saturday, September 10th. We'll be down there, same place the Blues Festival happens. From 10 a.m. to midnight, we have about 20 bands and 20 speakers throughout the day for hemp stock, which is a hemp, big hemp stem. You know, you mentioned...
What's the hours?
It's from 10 a.m. till midnight, so it'll be an all-day affair and into the evening.
And the date again?
It's Saturday, September 10th, the day before 9/11.
Now, I've got to ask you, how the heck did you get the waterfront? You think the mainstream folks and even the Parks Bureau, whoever, would say, let's not have this on the waterfront?
Well, they knew that we were going to draw a crowd, and they thought that was the best park in this part of town. They tried to steer us toward a park over in North Portland, but I didn't want to go to North Portland.
Isn't that
none of our people, not many of our people, live
in
North Portland.
Well, it's good that you're in Portland's second bedroom, Pioneer
yeah.
Courthouse Square being the first. This is the biggest one. I guess it's the living room.
Yeah. Well, in Seattle, they've had the Seattle Hemp Fest, and we have cooperation, and some of their bands and speakers are coming to our event, too.
They had
150,000 people at their event last weekend.
And the press is completely ignoring it.
Well, here, it didn't get much national coverage. It got covered pretty well up in Seattle.
Do you think we'll get coverage here?
I think so. You know, we also have something happening on Tuesday, September 13th. We are backing a lawsuit against the Justice Department and the Drug Enforcement Administration on behalf of a quadriplegic Vietnam veteran, Leroy Stubblefield, who lives up in Sweet Home. He had a DEA agent come in plain clothes, didn't say he was a federal agent, with a local narcotics agent. Now, you know, he's a quadriplegic man. He can't even move his hands, so he's got people who help him. He only had four plants and a permit that cost him $150 a year from the state of Oregon. And the local agent said, well, this is legal. And the DEA agent said, well, it's not under federal law, and I'm taking the plants. That made me a little upset when I first heard about it, and I took him some replacement plants. And we had a news conference up there, and we're suing the DEA, and we're going to have oral arguments on Tuesday, September 13th,
what
right
time
here in Portland, 10 o'clock at down in the federal courthouse building with impaneled...
Is that the Hatfield building?
Yeah, the Hatfield building.
Yeah, the
exactly.
Hatfield and McCoy's. And it is open to the public. Arrive early so you can go through the security.
Yeah.
Leave all metal objects behind and anything else that you might not want them to find. Go up there. It is public, and it's fascinating to go into these hallowed halls of federal judiciary. Nice wood paneling, by the way, and check this thing out. So
we're hoping that's going to protect Oregon medical marijuana patients.
So that's the 13th, 10 a.m. at the Hatfield Federal Building. And what is
exactly.
the judge?
It's a panel of three federal judges from San Francisco.
Is it an appeals?
It is. It's an appeal of a dismissal initially, and
so
then
court of appeals is what
we're real
for.
Hopeful given this rake decision in June, which really disappointed a lot of medical marijuana patients, that we're going to have some good news for them soon.
So, folks, if you go to the federal courthouse, 10 a.m. on the 13th, just say ask where the courtroom is for the court of appeals.
You know, there's something else that hasn't been covered in the media all around here that we should cover since we're talking about medical marijuana, and that's that in Oregon, the state legislature passed a bill that drastically expands the medical marijuana program in the state of Oregon.
Okay, well, let's get to that. So, Paul, could you explain the expansion of Oregon's medical marijuana program and maybe compare what it used to be and what it is now?
Sure. On August 4th, both houses of the Oregon legislature passed Senate Bill 1085. And the governor's office said they're going to sign it into law. I'm not sure whether they have as of this time. But the law had been, the limits on the medical marijuana program had been that a patient could possess up to 3 ounces at the grow site and one more ounce that they could carry with them away from the grow site. And they could grow a total of 7 plants. The legislature drastically increased the amount of marijuana that a patient can keep from 3 ounces to 24 ounces. So that's an 8-fold increase. And they increase the number of plants that a patient can grow from 7 plants to 24 plants. And they removed a really ambiguous designation of mature and immature plants that had been interpreted by law enforcement to mean budding, any sort of buds at all. Mm-hmm. To me, mature meant it's harvestable. But they said as soon as it showed buds, it was mature. And that's But under the new law, that definition's gone, and it's based on the height. A patient can have six plants that are taller or wider than 1 foot, and 18 plants that are shorter are not wider than 1 foot. And so it also allows patients to compensate their caregivers, and it forms a new sort of grower, a person called a person responsible for a grow site.
Now, when you say compensate caregiver, in what way? Cash?
Cash contributions in return for their expenses, from electricity to rent and supplies.
Was that not allowed before? It was just kind of ambiguous?
It was implicit. It was implicit, and
so
now it's explicit,
right?
Because
so
implicit
be no
meant that in Multnomah County it existed, but in Lake County, Klamath County, Josephine, many others, it didn't exist.
Let me ask you some more questions here. So it went from 3 ounces in possession to 24 ounces. Now,
exactly, a pound and a half. Right?
By the way, as a way of disclaimer, I am not an Oregon medical marijuana holder. And I don't think I will be in the future, maybe someday when I get older. Having said that...
Hopefully it'll be completely legal, and that's our goal.
Right, and you're not shy about that. The idea is that, you know, we have the medical use, and then the idea is that there should be a wider decriminalization.
Yeah, well, you know, putting sick people in jail was just evil.
Right. One step at a time. And, you know, a lot of the sinister folks are saying, well, you know, that's the whole thing. You guys just want to get people on meds, on medication, and then you're going to try to, you know, legalize or decriminalize the whole shebang. And I say, personally, well, what the heck?
Yeah.
But the having not seen what an ounce of marijuana looks like, what the heck is the, like, volume of 3 ounces versus 24 ounces? What are we talking about?
3 ounces would be maybe enough to fill up 2 cups, where a pound and a half would be enough to fill up a picnic basket, something like that.
Okay, so picnic baskets for health.
Yeah.
And so how long would it take, let's say, a medical marijuana card holder on average to use 3 ounces versus a pound and a half?
Well, an average patient, it would take them 2 to 3 months to use 3 ounces, where a pound and a half is probably a year's supply.
Well, that's great. So, you know, we're talking about an awful lot of medicine. This sounds like generally very positive. Now, what was the negative trade-off?
The negative trade-off that got the backing from Oregon law enforcement is that now there was a thing called an affirmative defense, which meant no matter the quantity of cannabis, a patient could say, this is for medical, and I want to tell the jury that this was a medical grow. And so now there is no affirmative defense for patients or caregivers or other people who are above the new limits of 24 ounces and 24 plants.
How do you think that's going to work out? I mean, is law enforcement going to get tougher if you have 24 and a half ounces? I mean,
you know,
what do you envision?
In Multnomah County, I don't think that's going to be a problem.
But
the police have been given some latitude. But if you're in other counties, it could be a problem. You could be prosecuted.
If you're in Lakeview, Oregon, you might have a little tougher trouble.
Exactly,
right?
And they've been prosecuting patients down there. I have to go for a couple of expert witness testimonies down there soon. But
you got to watch out for them, their marijuana smokers.
That's right. You know, we have at our foundation office, and I'd like to announce the opening of our new office just 10 blocks away from KBOO here. We're at the corner of Ankeny and Southeast 18th, just a block off Burnside. And we have several doctors who help, and nurse practitioners who help patients who have cancer, AIDS, mostly chronic pain, obtain medical marijuana permits.
And what's the address again?
It's 105 Southeast 18th. And that's at the corner of Ankeny and 18th.
Well, you're a KBOO neighbor. We're on Northeast 8th.
Yeah, we're just 10 blocks away.
So cardholders could come into KBOO, get a cup of tea or coffee, a muffin, contribute to KBOO 90.7 FM, and then walk on up to your office. And if they're a cardholder, they could just shoot the breeze. And if they're not, they could get information and hook up with doctors. Mm-hmm. You have a list of doctors that if their own physician won't refer them or they feel uncomfortable, then you can hook them up with that list. And I know that because
exactly.
I've seen your cable access program for years.
We've done 300 and I think 27 was the last number.
So how many years has it been?
We started in 96.
And so now I've just seen on your last program, and it's a little delayed, but I think you said that you're now giving videotapes to Washington and Hawaii and somewhere else, Colorado?
Well, we're looking at Colorado, but we haven't quite got there yet.
You've got an office in Seattle?
Yeah, we have an office up in Seattle, and we're just opening an office in Honolulu that's got a lot of publicity over there and even some coverage here locally. And an office in Ashland, Oregon, to see patients down there. Our doctors help patients in all of these locations.
Good for folks in Southern Oregon.
Exactly.
You know, not all of them are conservative down there.
That's right. And it's a long trip for very sick people to make up here, so we've decided to open up down there.
A lot of progressive folks on the southern coast down around Brookings, Coos Bay, North Bend. In fact, that's like a Democratic stronghold in a sea of Republicanism.
Yeah.
Now, having said all of that, then, how was your reception in Hawaii? Are the citizens of Hawaii generally positive about this?
Generally, it's mixed. There's a lot of interest. I'm amazed at the amount of media we've got since we haven't even opened up yet, but it's been covered in radio and television and on the front pages of the newspaper.
Well, let's face it, some of the native Hawaiians, both natives and the white folks that have moved in the last 200 years, they've been growing marijuana for
some
long
time. There's no doubt about that.
And so now this is the legal avenue.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Do they have a very similar medical marijuana law?
Their law was based on our Oregon law, and so it's very, very similar.
And Washington has one too. But the one critical difference you seem to keep mentioning, which is just the fact, Oregon does not recognize, anxiety or depression?
Exactly. And that's only recognized in California.
Oh, in California.
Currently.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because a lot more people, who I think already use marijuana and self-medicate for psychological
PTSD,
concerns.
Depression is really where it's most useful.
May I suggest something?
Anxiety.
As a former veteran, thank God, a peacetime vet, that with a lot of these returning vets from the Iraq War, both one and two, PTSD is predicted to be anywhere from 25% to 33% of the returning vets at some time in their life. That might be a great hook for saying, look, we need to treat these veterans, and it shouldn't just be giving them downers and really heavy heroin-based drugs or knows what, these psychoactive meds. Let them, get a medical marijuana card. Maybe that would be, maybe for the next legislature, a possible avenue towards those
things. I agree. There's a lot of folks who are on debilitating drugs for depression and PTSD where cannabis drastically improves their lifestyle. In fact, in Israel, the Israeli army about 6 months ago said that they were using cannabis to help their soldiers.
No way.
They're treating their soldiers.
All on the up and up.
And there are about 4 to 5 studies that come out every week on the medical efficacy of cannabis. And the federal government says there's no medical evidence, yet there are 4 or 5 articles in major medical journals every week, and this one about the Israeli army is just one example.
Now, that's what your program on cable access does. And by the way, before we forget, when is it on live, and if you can remember some of the re-cablecasts?
Sure. If you're in Portland, the main time that you can call in live and ask questions is Friday night, 8 p.m., 8 to 9 p.m. on Cable Channel 11.
Every Friday?
Every Friday night. So
okay, cable Access Channel 11, so you have to have at least basic cable.
Exactly.
And then the re-cable times?
It comes on at a number of times in Portland, Sunday night at 6 p.m. on 22, Cable Channel 22, and Thursday night at 11 p.m. on Cable Channel 23, and in East County, Cable Channel 21, it comes on at Monday at 9 p.m., a bunch of different times.
Now, you also give it down to CCTV, which I think is Salem. You know the cablecast times down there for our listeners in Salem?
I can't tell you the times in Salem. In Eugene, I know it's 9 p.m. on Wednesday nights. In Medford and Ashland, it's 10 o'clock on Monday nights. Mm-hmm. In Seattle, it's 10 a.m. on Monday mornings. So it's just all over the clock. But the main one here in Portland is 8 p.m. Friday night.
And for folks that are in the Salem area, check, I believe it's CC Television. Go ahead and check their website for the times. And the name of the program is?
It's Cannabis Common Sense.
Thank you.
They actually say it's the only program on cable access that's mentioned in TV Guide, and that's because of ratings. We get ratings. And I guess
you actually hit the ratings?
Yeah, I guess so. That's why TV Guide said they put us. We said, why are you putting us in? Because we were wanting to know, was it a stoner in the closet?
You hit the TV Guide radar. Oh, man, that's a compliment. So we have about over 10,000 cardholders now in Oregon.
Yeah, almost 12.
And it's growing.
And that's patients. There's another almost 6,000 card-carrying caregivers.
And this is growing, maybe not exponentially, but it's growing rather fast, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. There are almost 2,000 doctors who are now participating in the program.
And that's
one thing our foundation does, is give information to patients to help them approach their own doctor if they want to do that.
Well, that's a big, significant gain that you have made inroads in the medical community, because Dr. Levesque, who I greatly respect and as a co-host along with Don Dupay, a former law enforcement officer.
Yeah, a co-host on our cannabis conference.
Absolutely
sense
amazing. He's a
TV
law
show.
Enforcement officer who's using it for hepatitis.
Yeah.
And you have expressed on your show that you have, you know, over 10 active duty law enforcement officers that are current card holders. So imagine folks out there who might have, you know, negative thoughts about law enforcement, that there are some officers that actually are smoking medical marijuana to relieve their symptoms, and they're law enforcement officers. So you can imagine how they might view, you know, people that are using this medicine.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Dr. Levesque, did they suspend his license?
His license is suspended, and we're funding a challenge and an appeal of that suspension. And that's in the Oregon Court of Appeals right now.
This guy was taking, like, the lion's share of patients, and really, I think, in my opinion,
pioneered at his expense. And
I think your whole TV show, your cable show, the foundation's work, and Dr. Levesque, when history is written 10, 20 years from now, we take a look back, will be known as heroes.
Yeah, Dr. Levesque is a hero in many senses of the word.
He was a
scout in the infantry in Patton's army, marching across Germany back in his early 20s. They put him on the scout post, which the average lifetime was about 48 hours, and he managed to live all the way to the end of the war and is here now.
Well, that means he's seen some stuff. And he's been a teacher at medical colleges.
He taught at 10 different medical schools, Georgetown University in D.C., the University of Georgia. He worked through Oxford in Africa. Oxford University in England placed him in Uganda for a few years. And he has his Ph.D. in pharmacology and toxicology from
which
right
is drugs
here in Oregon
and their effects.
Exactly. So he's a real expert
and
on
this
that.
Guy
that's what
ought
he
to
taught.
Know. Right. And isn't it, but the medical establishment is so resistant and so inculcated with the party line about the demon weed is that they just can't give it up, despite medical literature from around the world for years.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you guys are fighting a good fight, and that's
thanks
in part why you're here on KBOO. Now, in the remaining 4 or 5 minutes that we have, I'd like for you to make any points you'd like to make. Now, again, as a reminder, let us know about the activity down on the waterfront this coming weekend and your office, please.
Okay. Our new office location is opened up at 105 Southeast 18th. We're expanding fourfold in terms of the space. We're going from about 1,300 square feet to a 5,000 square foot office, and we really needed
that. And your phone number there?
It's 503-281-5100 for the THC Foundation.
281-5100.
Exactly.
That's 281-5100, folks. Write it down.
Thanks, Scott.
And this waterfront gig, which I think the press can't avoid because it's right there on the waterfront.
That's right. That's coming up Saturday, September 10th from 10 a.m. in the morning till midnight. We have about 20 bands and 20 speakers, and it's going to be an exciting event.
Fee to get in?
It's free. Free to the public.
No way.
The vendors.
Even the bands?
The vendors are paying everything. The bands are free, too. It's going to be a great show from 10 a.m. till midnight on Saturday, September 10th.
You guys are certainly smart marketers, I'll tell you. You know,
well, that thanks.
Free is a very good price.
Free is
thank
very
you,
good.
Tom Peterson, wherever you are. The other thing is that you have this important court case. I mean, a quadriplegic taking his medicine legal in the state of Oregon.
Paying $150 a year at the time. Now, since then, the fee's been lowered to just $55 a year and $20 for people on the Oregon Health
Plan.
And
here the big old feds, instead of focusing on meth, which they seem to, hallelujah, just figured out that meth is a problem after a decade of increase, They're going to bust a quadriplegic with medicine that was quite legal in the state. So this sounds like a really important cutting-edge case. Am I wrong on that?
No. Our attorney, Ann Witte, who's been handling this, and she's a great lady, she has found a clause in the Controlled Substance Act that says the ultimate end user can have controlled substances if it's allowed under state law. Well, that's what we do in the medical
marijuana
law.
And this is a federal case.
It'll be
the 13th. Scheduled at 10 a.m. at the Hatfield Federal Courthouse in downtown Portland, and it'll be at the Court of Appeals.
Exactly.
And so folks want to go there, you can go there. It's open to the public. They usually have seats for about 50 or so folks, I'm guessing. You'll go through a metal detector. It's not a problem. It's a public building. And just ask for the Court of Appeals from any of the gentlemen that are there helping you through security.
But then we have the Hemp for Biodiesel Initiative that we're hoping to put on the ballot for a vote next November.
Have you gotten your language approved?
Not yet. We're still...
When do you anticipate it being on the street?
By the fall. It's going to be probably two or three more months.
So good. We broke some news here. We're on the cutting edge. And then could folks call your office for more information if they wanted to help on that initiative? And that number is?
503-281-5100. It's 281-5100.
Okay, now let's see. We got about a minute and a half.
Okay,
and
the main thing.
Yeah, what is the main thing?
We talk about the environmental benefits of hemp. 1 acre of hemp can, at the same time, produce 300 gallons of oil, which is useful for biodiesel and for food and medicine before it goes rancid. Once it's rancid, it's good for fuel. Then 3 tons of high-protein hemp seed meal. Then there's 5 to 10 tons of hemp bast fiber, which used for canvas, rope, lace, and linen, the highest quality ultra-thin papers. And 25 tons of hemp herd fiber, which is useful for paper and building materials.
Well, Paul Stanford of the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, it's a pleasure having you. I will have you back. I think this is an important issue. Want to talk in greater detail about the biodiesel initiative. And I'm going to find the theme song to Green Acres the next time we talk. Okay, folks?
All right.
Remember, this is Monday on the Environment. I'm your host, Scott Forster. It is a pleasure to be here. And remember
Thanks for
also
having me, Scott.
That every day is Earth Day. Thanks, Paul.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.